Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals for April 12th, 2023. I'm Rico Bishop. I'm pleased to be joined by Judge Francine Reedman on my right and Judge David Arterburn on my left. So we have four cases scheduled for this afternoon, and the three of us will be here for the first case, and then I will step out for the second case, and Judge Mike Pirtle will come in to sit on that case, and Judge Reedman will preside at that time for that case. So that's our plan anyway. So we'll go ahead and get started. And as I call the case name, please come up to the table if you're not already there. And then I will call the name out a second time for purposes of the recording. And then we'll get started. And I would just remind you that we are live streaming. So if there is sensitive information in your case, just be careful about, you know, maybe not using last names, et cetera. So, all right, with that, we'll go ahead and begin. And our first case of the day is In Re Interest of Jesselina. Again, it's In Re Interest of Jesselina. And let's wait, do we not have... I'm sorry. That's right. Hello. Yes. So we have the guardian ad litem for the child is joining us by Zoom. Thank you for being willing to do that. We welcome you. So Ms. Long is joining us by Zoom and Mr. Rosen.
Good afternoon, Your Honors and Mrs. Long, and may it please the court. My name is Greg Rosen. I'm appearing for Samantha Mestis, the appellant and the mother of the minor child. I would ask to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal, if I may. The appellant asked this court to reverse the lower court's TPR decision. The main assignments of error in the appellant's brief are that the Lincoln County Court erred when it deprived Ms. Mestis of her due process rights, and the Cheyenne County Court erred when they found statutory parental unfitness and that terminating Samantha's parental rights were in Jesselina's best interest. In a 1974 U.S. Supreme Court case, Matthews versus Eldridge, the court held that a fundamental requirement of due process is the opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner. In 2004, the Nebraska Supreme Court, in re interest of Maynor T, offers more guidance. Due process controls the proceedings in a juvenile court with an emphasis on fundamental fairness. The appellate court may review the trial court proceedings for due process violations, and due process requires notice, reasonable opportunity to defend, and reasonable defend and refute accusations, and reasonable opportunity to confront and cross-examine witnesses, present evidence, and representation by counsel. The appellee's brief does not dispute the statement of facts in the appellant's brief, and in 2020, Samantha fled, moved from Cheyenne County to Lincoln County after getting a protection order from Jesselina's dad. Jesselina was born September 8th in 2020. 2 days later, DHHS detained Jesselina and the county court filed a petition, juvenile petition. Then DHHS placed Jesselina in foster care in Cheyenne County, approximately, that's about 100 miles away from where Samantha lived. So consequently, visits covered great distances, lots of travel time, were exceedingly difficult for everybody. The parents were both adjudicated in Lincoln County and subsequent hearings followed. Then in May of 2021, Samantha objects to the court report and case plan. The court set an evidentiary hearing for June 30th. So then at this point, the case and the parties were in Lincoln County for about 10 months. Samantha had two court-appointed attorneys and a guardian ad litem. Samantha subpoenaed witnesses for the upcoming contested hearing. Samantha's counsel was well-versed on the merits and was preparing for the hearing. So then on June 17th, Jesselina's guardian ad litem files a motion to transfer the case back to Cheyenne County. Samantha's written objection was filed the very next day. Samantha's objection points out the undue prejudice by the transfer to Cheyenne County and severe prejudice if the motion was heard or decided prior to the previously scheduled hearing. So then on June 22nd, the Lincoln County Court, on its own motion, postpones Samantha's contested hearing indefinitely and instead dockets the guardian ad litem's motion to transfer.
But it was subsequently held in Cheyenne County in September of 2021.
Yes, it was, Your Honor. But by that time, the facts of the matter have changed. The very objections that may have been raised the train had already left the station by that time. So the facts changed, the judge changed.
How did the facts change?
The facts that the case was moved to a different county with different attorneys, with a different judge, with people having to travel in different ways to, you know, accommodate their schedule. Time passed as well. You know, the clock keeps ticking with the 15 out of the 22 months. So the facts on the grounds on the ground changed. Well,
the objection was to the May 4th, 2021 plan, right? Is that what she was objecting to?
Yes, and placement as well.
Okay. And what were the objections that she had, or if you don't want to list them specifically, how did those change, or did they change when the hearing was actually held?
Well, she objected to the case plan,
right?
And then the judge went ahead and implemented the case plan anyway over the objections before there was a hearing on it. So she couldn't get her voice plans heard on the case plan.
But she was able to have all the arguments raised at the September 21 hearing, and actually resulted in the court entering an order eliminating eliminating adoption as an alternative to the reunification that had previously been ordered. So it sounds like she benefited as a result.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because part of her objections was the case plan talked about transferring and the dad getting more visitation time and the mom getting less visitation time. And we can't know what the trial attorneys at the time were going to object to, because that's another part of the facts that changed. She had a whole new legal team that only had a week or so to prepare for this hearing. At the time she was finally heard on September 21st, which was months after the May 11th objection, I think it was.
Were any motions made to move it up from the September 21st hearing?
Your Honor, back in Lincoln County, Samantha.
No, I mean in Cheyenne County. Were there any motions made
to speed along the hearing?
Yeah, to ask for an earlier hearing date.
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. Samantha, I think there was a mix up when the case first got transferred there. The court appointed attorney had some medical issues. They couldn't coordinate their schedules. That attorney withdrew, and then another court appointed attorney was assigned, I want to say a week or maybe 2 weeks before the hearing.
And didn't the court appointed attorney actually file a motion to withdraw, saying that she was fired by the mother?
Yes, Your Honor.
So to the extent that that was the case, then the mother actually created some delay on her by her own action.
And Samantha would argue that the reason that she was fired was that there was a lack of communication. She couldn't talk to her. There's an email on the record where she asked the clerk, "Hey, where's my lawyer? I don't have any representation."
Wasn't it a problem throughout this case that there were issues with the mother not being able to communicate well with people who were trying to help her? In fact, that she became very irate, demeaning, defamatory, and so forth.
Yes, Your Honor. There's no allegation of Samantha being a shrinking violet. She did have confrontations with a lot of these folks. Because she has been involved in the system for a while. She was mistrusting of the system.
Would you agree that mental health issues were a significant factor in the mother not being reunified with her child?
Yes, Your Honor. Mental issues were definitely an issue in this case. It's on the record, too, that she went voluntarily and participated in a psychological evaluation in November. And she attended counseling. She was on medication counseling as well. And she was making efforts to address those mental issues. If I may, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Long?
Thank you, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, Mr. Rosen, I am the court-appointed guardian ad litem for Jesselina in this case. To trail off of the issue of the due process issue, I would highlight a couple things. One is the case plan was designed well before there was even a court hearing for the parents. They had the initial appearance. She chose to have an adjudication, and there was testimony that HHS had created a case plan for the mother. She chose not to work it, and that's her choice. However, that choice comes with a consequence in that if you choose not to work the plan of reunification, you can't blame someone else. The plan itself only changed, as you noted, from the permanency goal of adoption being removed. The rest of the goals and strategies remained. So the delay from Lincoln County to Cheyenne County really made no difference other than the mother choosing not to participate or cooperate with anything to try to achieve reunification. And since the goal was reunification, it would have been to her betterment had she cooperated. She didn't. She chose not to. That's not the fault of Lincoln County. That's not the fault of Cheyenne County. Her due process rights were not violated. In the same breath, you note the arguments or disagreement she had with her court-appointed counsel. If you look at the record from Lincoln County, it appears the same type of disruptive communication occurred with her attorney there. There was one constant in that her court-appointed guardian ad litem remained on the case, regardless of the transfers. So even when she was appointed a new attorney, the guardian ad litem had remained. There was no request to get an earlier hearing than what was there. She later fired her second court-appointed attorney and then had a third one there. We're now in a position where the record shows Mr. Rosen would be her fourth attorney in this case because, again, she continued to have a breakdown with her third court-appointed attorney. So I don't think that the services were denied, the access to the courts were denied, her guardian ad litem, none of those were taken from her, regardless of the transfer from Lincoln County to Cheyenne County. So we submit that her due process rights were not violated.
Ms. Long, can I have you address termination on subsection 7? It's my understanding that the child was placed with her father in January of 2022. Is that an excluded period of time? Is that considered a out-of-home placement for purposes of subsection 7?
For HHS, it is not. For how we calculated it is, because the goal was reunification. She was removed from mother. Regardless, Your Honor, the time in which she was removed was September of 2020. She didn't get placed until January of 22 with her father. So even if you use HHS's calculations, that's 16 months. So we've surpassed
Don't we go from... Well, and here's another question. When we start, it's 22, the most recent 22 months. Recent from when? The time of filing the termination petition, the time the termination hearing begins, the time it ends, the time of the order. What's our start back period?
The start is from the time in which the petition is filed. For instance, if you're saying someone has abandoned a child, you must show at the time of the petition, it's been that 6 month timeframe. The 15 out of 22 is at the time of the petition, 22 months from that moment, reversing, had the child been in an out of home placement, 15 of those 22 most recent months. So at the time the TPR was filed, and I believe it was filed in March of 2022, that would have been the 22 months start or the look back period beginning point. So then reversing it, she was removed in September of 20, placed with her father in January of 22. That is technically 16 months out of the most recent 22 months. Right. So moving along with that, Your Honors, when you have the 15 out of 22, there's also a concern that the court has to find essentially a determination of unfitness. You know, the case, the Lincoln County Court ordered that you provide reasonable efforts. Because the mother's rights had been previously terminated, they were not required to, but they did anyway. But the unfitness is very clearly defined in our law, and it says a personal deficiency or incapacity which has prevented or will prevent performance of a reasonable parental obligation in childbearing, and which has caused or probably will result in detriment to the child's well-being. I think the record is abundantly clear. Just little basic things would impact the mother's ability to parent Jesselina. She wasn't even two, and mom couldn't get out of bed on time. She said her meds bothered her, so we moved her visits to later in the morning. She still couldn't even make those. A two-year-old can't fend for themselves waiting for mommy to wake up. That's a very basic parental obligation. And you got to get your kid up, get him dressed, get him fed. There was also no updated psychological evaluation, which by her own request was made. She had a very specific provider she wanted to do it, and she chose not to follow through with that. And then because of her ongoing aggressive behaviors and missing visits, fighting with providers, the court then said, you're not going to get anything else other than Zoom calls until you get that updated evaluation that you requested. She chose not to do it. So we had nothing to say that what she was showing had bettered. But what it had shown is that her pattern had continued from where we involved in her years before in a prior termination to where we are now. She just didn't provide the necessary environment to show that Jesselina would be safe with her. And so the determination that the mother was unfit is absolutely correct by the lower court. I think I noted that pretty clearly in our brief, so I won't waste a lot of time on that. But I did also highlight that one's past history can dictate the future. And I think it was very clear that the testimony Ms. Olivares said, these goals were the same basic goals we had in a prior case. The same behaviors occurred from the mother in this case. And we just basically made no progress. And even so, Your Honors, the court also said, we don't have to have an expert testify that these are prolonged mental health issues. But with that being said, PTSD, as at least she claims she had, is noted as a long-term, long-lasting mental health diagnosis or effect. And there was just no work to be done on it. She didn't sign releases to say she was in counseling to confirm that. We had, I think, one medical provider testify that she had at least seen her a couple of times. And that's the most we ever knew. And that was at the time of the TPR trial. It was just very clear. Her mental health was a huge, huge barrier in this case.
The psychologist that she went to, that she chose to go to, Ms. Rainey, didn't she testify that it would not be in Jesselina's best interest to terminate her mother's parental rights?
She did, Your Honor. And I would kind of qualify that. Ms. Rainey wasn't ever an expert by way of updating a psychological evaluation. What she was an expert that said, I reviewed some of the case files, some of the case plan, some of the visitation notes. And it was very picking and choosing what she did review, because my cross-examination of her basically said, did you look at this? No. Did you look at that? No. So what was provided to her were very positive reports of when she did have visits, things were going well. And yes, Ms. Rainey said, well, I think you give this kid right back, all these stresses will go away and we wouldn't have these issues. And that to me is not in the child's best interest, especially when the same behaviors we had seen before were the same behaviors we were seeing now. That is not clearly in Jesselina's best interest to say, forget it all. You go back home. We can't do that. We can't ignore mom's mental health. And that was the sole reason, I shouldn't say sole, the main reason for Jesselina being removed was mom's behaviors at the hospital. And we can't just ignore that.
Behaviors at the hospital go quite a ways back. So sure. more recent interactions between the mother and the child. I mean, there is evidence in the record that they had a bond and that the mother was loving with the child and vice versa. So what's the worst evidence in the latter part of the progression of things that would suggest she just couldn't parent anymore?
Sure. Well, NRA JSMH says if you're going to look at the unfitness, you got to look at whether or not there's a beneficial relationship And then second, have the parenting skills improved. And we could argue if there was a beneficial relationship. I think Jesselina acknowledged her mom. She would reach for her. We get that. However, her mom was not there even 50% of the time. And then second to that, if you can't show up 50, you know, at least 100% of the time, heck, we'll go 80%. We can't say that mom's parenting skills improved, because if you recall, there was a very specific order, an agreement that said, do not interrupt her, do not correct her, do not suggest anything during visits. Mom did not want to try to change her behaviors to show she could be safe. And that was a huge, huge barrier for this case. And so
there's no evidence that she was, or that Jesselina was unsafe at any time she was with her mom at these visitations.
Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I have some time to answer that?
Yes, please.
Yes. Actually, that's a little untrue, Your Honor, in that law enforcement was summoned once, I believe, maybe even twice, because mother's behaviors got so erratic and she was refusing to calm down. She refused to turn the child over to law enforcement. Law enforcement had to be involved. She was squeezing the child. So I would disagree that mother never put the child in harm's way, even during her visits, but further say, if you can't parent and show up even at 10 a.m., that is definitely putting your child in harm's way. And we have nothing to show that you have bettered to make this child go home to you in a safe environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
No questions.
All right. Thank you very much. How much time did we take her over?
48 seconds.
Let's go ahead and add that to Mr. Rosen's time if he wants it.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just to address some of Ms. Long's arguments, the incident where law enforcement called, yes, they were called. And I believe Samantha called law enforcement as well as the DHHS worker, for whatever that's worth. And like you said, Your Honor, at no time was Jesselina in any danger or health compromised at any time when they were with their moms. All accounts, even in the own DHHS court report and case plan, said they had a bond, they loved each other, they played together, they were affectionate towards each other, and there wasn't really any reports of impropriety on Samantha's part toward Jesselina. Towards the caseworkers, there's a different argument there. Now, as far as getting back to the 15 out of the 22 months issue, the parental rights are intact. I mean, she's still the parent until the order comes down. So I would argue that when the order comes down, that's when you count backwards.
But in order to even assert it as a basis for termination, doesn't it have to exist at the time the petition is filed?
It does. But the policy behind that law, I believe, is that the child shouldn't languish in foster care. The child was in dad's home for 8 months prior to when that order came down, and remains still in the father's home, as far as I know. As far as the best interests are concerned, there's a lot of talk about missed visits, late visits, this kind of visits, but the trial court didn't consider the distance, physical and mental distance between mom and child that the case plan placed on these people. The trips were so arduous that, and then if she shows up 15 minutes late, they cancel the whole day-long visit.
But that was eventually adjusted to allow for a 30-minute.
There were adjustments. Yeah. And there were, you know, there were some
and other locations were chosen.
Yes, but I think the court failed to acknowledge that. And I think that goes into the balancing interest of the best interest of the child. I see my time's up. If I can make a quick conclusion.
Sure.
The trial court did make reversible errors by denying due process rights to Samantha and by finding statutory unfitness and determining Samantha's rights were in Jesseline's best interest. I'd reassert and submit my arguments, the arguments made in the appellant's brief and Samantha's request for reversal of the trial court's decisions. And thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Ms. Long, for joining us via Zoom. The matter is submitted. And at this time, I'm going to step out. Chief Judge Pirtle comes in for the next case, which is State versus Manka.